Our last case for argument, Frederick versus Holder, Ms. Baldini-Peterman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Maria Baldini-Poterman, and I represent the petitioner Michael Barolo Frederick in this case. At the heart of this case, Your Honors, is the scope of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in INS versus St. Cyr. In INS versus St. Cyr, the Supreme Court held that 212C relief must remain available for aliens whose convictions were obtained through plea agreements and who, notwithstanding those convictions, would have been eligible for INA Section 212C relief at the time of their plea under the law then in effect. In this particular case, Mr. Frederick clearly fits within the whole scope of INS versus St. Cyr. The government has not in any way contested that his two counts for aggravated criminal sexual abuse do not constitute crimes involving moral turpitude. Petitioner Frederick, before the immigration judge, raised this affirmatively, and that is the basis of our argument. Petitioner Frederick has continued to raise this. On April 17th of 1990, he pled guilty to two counts in violation of Illinois Revised Statute Chapter 38, 12-16B, and Subsection D.
I understand this, this concept, crimes of moral turpitude. Aren't all serious crimes crimes of moral turpitude?
No, Your Honor, not all.
What is the definition of a crime of moral turpitude?
Your Honor, the definition of a crime involving moral turpitude has morphed and varied over the years. And in general, it has involved such things as fraud, elements of offenses involving fraud or deceit.
What about murder?
Yes, Your Honor, murder would also be deemed to be a crime involving moral turpitude as the Board
what
of Immigration.
Is a crime, moral turpitude?
It's a crime that is deemed to be so vile or depraved and against society.
No. What's an example of a crime that isn't a crime of moral turpitude?
That is not a crime involving moral turpitude, Your Honor. That, for example, would be driving without a license. In Illinois now, if you drive without a license and you do not have resident alien status or other lawful immigration status, that's a Class 4 felony offense. That
now
can
wait,
be deemed.
But you're not saying, are you, that's worse than a crime of moral turpitude or what? I don't understand. It's better to commit a crime of moral turpitude if you're an alien?
Your Honor, I'm not saying that it's better to commit a crime involving moral turpitude if you're an alien because you may be.
Yes, the driving without a license if you're an alien would get you in more trouble than sexual molestation with the immigration authorities.
No, Your Honor, I'm not specifically stating that. Let's take another example of something where the Supreme Court has weighed in on a particular crime. For example, driving while under the influence. In 2004, the Supreme Court reviewed that as far as whether or not it was an aggravated felony and found that it was not. Some elements of the Department of Homeland Security have argued that driving under the influence may be a crime involving moral turpitude. Not every serious crime is going to be a crime involving moral turpitude, and not every serious crime is going to result in the deportation of an alien either. Some would say driving a third offense for driving under the influence is a crime involving moral turpitude.
But I thought your position was anything that's a crime of moral turpitude if you were sentenced before 212C was repealed, you can ask for a waiver of removal.
No, Your Honor, that is not our position. What our position is strictly the reading of St. Cyr's holding. If you were deportable at the time of your plea and thus also eligible for a 212C waiver, then you are qualified to apply for a 212C waiver. In this particular case,
Where does crime of moral turpitude enter?
Where does the crime of moral turpitude enter? Both of the offenses for which he was convicted.
Yeah, look, you said if he had a deportable, conviction, deportable offense, he was deportable back when there was a 212C, then he can still ask for a waiver. That's your argument. Why do we have to get into crimes of moral turpitude? If he was removable because of these sex offenses, then he was removable. And then what does it matter whether it's a crime of moral turpitude?
Your Honor, it matters whether it's a crime involving moral turpitude because the Department of Homeland Security charged him as being deportable not for two crimes involving moral turpitude, but rather because they charged him as being deportable for having been convicted of an aggravated felony.
What difference does it make? I thought your argument was that if he was convicted of a deportable offense, then he can ask for a waiver. Isn't that your argument?
No, Your Honor, that is not entirely our argument. Because in this particular case, what is at play here is this court's prior precedent involving persons who are charged as being deportable for sexual abuse of a minor, which was a definition that was amended in 1996.
Why does crime of moral turpitude, why does that get into the question? I don't understand.
Your Honor, it needs to come into the question because of the issue of settled expectations and the Supreme Court's case law involving Landsgraf and the imposition of...
What if he had been ordered removed for spitting on the sidewalk or something? Would that mean he couldn't seek a waiver now?
Your Honor, there was no ground of deportation. He could not have been deportable.
This is hypothetical. Suppose he's... Whatever he's removed for, some criminal offense, wouldn't you argue that whatever the criminal offense that made him removable, he can seek a waiver? It doesn't matter what the offense is, does it?
Your Honor, it does matter what the offense is. Why? At the time of the guilty plea, because of the reliance of aliens who enter into plea agreements and the quid pro quo that the Supreme Court discussed about persons who entered into plea agreements with the reliance and the expectation that 212C really would be available.
But why does it matter what the offense was that he entered into the plea agreement?
The board has chosen to...
The board used that as their criteria for requiring his immediate ousting.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
That's why it becomes important.
Yes, because they have determined, and perhaps if we can just briefly review the history of the Immigration Nationality Act from 1996 forward. At the time that...
Not month by month, I hope.
No, Your Honor, that would be about at least 35 different amendments since then. In 1996, when Congress expanded the definition of an aggravated felony beyond what it did in 1990, it added this new ground of deportability called sexual abuse of a minor.
Right.
In the year of 2001, when the Supreme Court decided St. Cyr, that definition was already in play. The Supreme Court did not in any way limit the scope of 212C relief. Instead, the court said, you go back to the time of the plea. If the alien was deportable at the time of the plea and eligible at the time of the plea for the 212C relief, the alien remains eligible for that relief.
You said that, of course, without using the term crime involving moral turpitude. That's my puzzle. I don't see what that adds.
He was deportable, Your Honor, for having been convicted of two crimes involving moral turpitude. And
that said, what if he had been deportable for involving two crimes not involved in moral turpitude? Would that mean he'd have no reliance interest and no...
Then he would not have been eligible for 212C. Let's say if he had been convicted for two firearms offenses. Firearm offenses have never fallen within the scope of 212C. And the only
But the paradox is that you're suggesting if you commit a minor offense, you're still removable, these firearm offenses, relatively minor, but you can't seek a waiver, whereas if you do something really bad, like these crimes, then you're eligible for a waiver.
I take it that was the law of the time, what you're talking about.
Yes, Your Honor, that was the law.
It's not your idea, it's the law that was in effect at the time.
Yes, Your Honor.
But is that true, that the waiver is only for very serious crimes and not for lesser crimes?
Specifically named.
Your Honor, the way the Immigration Nationality Act read on April 17th of 1990, when Mr. Frederick pled guilty, was that you could be deported if you had been convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude and sentenced to at least 1 year of term of imprisonment.
So that creates your problem here. That's your issue here.
That's our issue. Well, it's not just that,
yeah,
Your Honor,
now
because...
Now you can apply because they've changed the rules.
If he had been convicted of just one count, he would not have been deportable because you had to be deportable.
But I'm sorry to keep pestering you, but according to you, he could have been deported for two firearms offenses. Right? Didn't you say that?
No, I'm not saying my client could have.
Could he have been deported for crimes not of moral turpitude?
If he had been deportable for crimes not involving moral turpitude, he would not have been eligible for a 212C
waiver. Yes, but was that a possibility, that you could be deported for crimes not involving moral turpitude and yet have no basis for a waiver, even though it was a less serious offense that you were being deported for?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
What sense does that make?
Doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense, Your Honor, but that's the way Congress wrote the statute.
Okay.
It's a strict statutory interpretation of what the law existed at the time of the plea.
I surrender.
I notice my time is
expired. No, go ahead. You can take more time. I interrupted you.
No, wait. She wants to see if she'll be rebuttal.
No, you can have rebuttal. You can have rebuttal too, but if you want to say more now, you can. Well, it's my fault, you know.
No, thank you, Your Honors, very much. The one critical point I just wanted to make was regarding this court's prior precedent in Zamora, Malari, and in Valer, I'd like to just go through those factually for just a moment. In the case of Mr. Valer in particular, according to the court's opinion, he entered in 1968 as a permanent resident. It was not until 1994 that he pled guilty to indecent assault of a child and was sentenced to 4.5 years of imprisonment. At the time that he pled, he wasn't deportable because he had not been convicted within 5 years of entry. So this Mr. Frederick's case is clearly distinguishable. In Zamora Malari, the same situation exists. None of those petitioners were actually deportable at the time they entered their pleas. So they don't fall under the strict reading of St. Cyr. And with that, Your Honors, I will reserve a few minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Baldini-Paterman. Ms. Watson?
May it please the Court, Your Honor. My name is Joanna Watson. I'm here on behalf of the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder. And the government's position, this case is entirely controlled by Zamora Mayari, and that the petitioner was found removable on aggravated felon sexual abuse of a minor. And he's ineligible for a 212C waiver because there's no comparable grounds.
Now it's different from the St. Cyr case because he pleaded guilty to 4 years, right?
He had two counts. It was four. He received
He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 4 years, right?
Yeah, two counts.
Okay.
Two consecutive.
So he wanted to be
years.
Under five, right? Is it five? If he got five, he couldn't get the waiver at that time, right?
Well, there was one crime involving moral turpitude, and I guess the two crimes.
Whatever it was. By pleading guilty or making some deal that got him only 4 years, he preserved his right for a waiver. But if he'd gone to trial and been convicted and sentenced to a higher amount, then he wouldn't be eligible for the waiver. So isn't that what St. Cyr says, that these people relied on the waiver to plead guilty, make some sort of deal that would preserve their right to seek a waiver later? And why isn't his situation the same?
His situation in the court, this court in Zamora Mayari, explicitly stated that you look to the grounds of removability that you were charged with by DHS, not the underlying conviction. So it doesn't matter what DHS could have charged him with.
I don't understand that, because when he's pleading guilty, he doesn't know what ground on which he's going to be deported, right? He's pleading guilty, and he wants to preserve this waiver. Now, he may realize that the Immigration Service may have some ground that they can deport him on, which would not be within the scope of the waiver. That's a possibility.
Correct.
But he's hoping they'll deport him on this crime of moral turpitude, and then he has the benefit of the waiver. So isn't that what Saint-Cyr is about? That it's protecting a possible, maybe it's a little fictional, possible reliance interest. Plead guilty, you know, don't fight it, because having the possibility of a waiver maybe is more important to you.
Yes, Saint-Cyr, it is potentially reserving the right to the 212C.
How is this? I don't see how this is different.
How this particular case is different? Well, I mean, this court has held that.
How is this case different?
Oh, from Saint-Cyr?
Yeah.
Well, Saint-Cyr didn't actually get to the comparable grounds of removability. It just said that somebody qualifies for 212C, you know, that they, at the time.
Right.
But you have
But the thinking behind it, this reliance interest applies whether or not, whatever the ground of deportation, unless they've told you what the ground of deportation is. If they haven't told you yet, then you have this possibility that, you know, there'll be a, it'll be on the basis of the crime involving moral turpitude, and so you'll have your, you know, your shot at a waiver.
Potentially, but ultimately, I mean, it's what this court has held is that it's the what you were charged with, not potentially, you know, the prosecutorial discretion of DHS, how, you know, what grounds they could have brought. It ultimately comes down to he was charged as an aggravated felon sexual abuse of a minor.
But you can see how that doesn't really fit the reliance reasoning of the Saint-Cyr case.
Well, Saint-Cyr just, it didn't get to the comparable grounds. It just said...
No, but it's about reliance, and the reliance is affected by the comparable ground, but it's not destroyed by it.
Correct, it's not.
Yeah.
You still have to look to it. And ultimately, I mean, it's a distinction without difference. He was ultimately charged with removability as an aggravated felon, and this court determined that that's not a comparable ground under 212A, a crime involving moral turpitude of the two crimes. It's already been decided by this court.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Watts. So we'll give you a minute, Ms. Baldemi. Chairman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just two brief points. Regarding the government's argument that it only matters what DHS charges them on, the reliance issue is the main issue in this case. And back on April 17th of 1990, the only grounds on which Mr. Frederick could have been charged with being deportable was for having multiple crimes involving moral turpitude. The definition of an aggravated felony at that time only constituted murder, drug trafficking, and firearms trafficking. There was no other ground on which he could have been charged. So the government's argument that...
You know, which he could have been denied application for a waiver.
Yes, Your Honor. He could not... He was eligible for the waiver at the time. Because
that was the only ground. You're saying the only ground on which he could have been deported was this crime of moral turpitude, not the aggravated felony, because that came later. Is that what you're saying?
That's right, Your Honor. And so there is reliance here because he pled guilty. As far as the court's question about that he didn't get 5 years as a sentence and so therefore he would still be eligible for 212C, the 5-year service term of imprisonment didn't come into play until November 30th of 1990, when Congress overhauled with IMAC 1990 and at that point put, if you served 5 years or more for an aggravated felony, would you no longer be eligible for a 212C? That was not made retroactive. So because his plea took place prior to November 30th of 1990 with MAC 90, the five-year term of imprisonment isn't even an issue.
Well, what was he facing?
At the time, he was facing up to 13 years, Your Honor.
13 years. But he pleaded guilty to four, or he pleaded guilty and then he was sentenced to four?
He was sentenced to two terms of 4 years to run concurrently.
But anything, what would be the sentence that would preclude the waiver?
For the date on which he pled, there was no sentence, Your Honor, and there was no specific term of imprisonment.
So even if he pleaded guilty, or even if he'd been sent to 13 years, he still would have been eligible.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, and how do you? I think you said this, and I missed it. And how do you distinguish the Zamora-Mallory case?
As far as Zamora-Mallory, Your Honor, each of those defendants, or I'm sorry, the respondents in those cases, was not deportable at the time they entered their guilty plea. Because they were not deportable at the time they entered their plea, they weren't. 212C wasn't even an issue.
Is important. Is that where the crime of moral turpitude comes in?
Yes, Your Honor. He was deportable for two crimes involving moral turpitude. Therefore, the counterpart or the comparable ground was he was inadmissible for two crimes involving moral turpitude. So under St. Cyr, he would be found to be clearly eligible for a 212C waiver.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel.
Thank you.
The court will be in recess until...